Featured guest today says the European Central Bank is at risk of failing, which could send interest rates soaring, outlines contingency plans for investors to shield their portfolios. Martin Armstrong, author of The Greatest Bull Market in History, Economic Confidence Model, and founder of Princeton Economics. Welcome back, Martin Armstrong.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Just take the issue of the wall, okay? $5.7 billion out of a $1.3 trillion, budget. We're not even talking about 0.1. So it's just a political issue. He ran for it. We have to oppose it. It's not whether it's good or bad for the country. This is what we're into.
An article popped up from the Pentagon that said they have agreed to at least $1 billion of the funding of that simply to secure our borders. Again, I don't want to get into the political fray. I'm a political atheist. At least our military recognizes there is a clear and present threat to our sovereignty.
Well, absolutely. Look, I mean, if you really wanted to be a terrorist, you were smart, you just fly into one of the South American countries and you can walk across the border. I mean, you can't get on a plane, you can't go to Canada and come. I mean, it's open season. Anybody with a rational mind would do that, but, they turn into a political issue. Get on a plane going to Europe after 2021. I mean, you got to be clear to even get on a plane.
Your models have been spot on so far in the past few years you've been on the show, and my guess is you have a feel for where we end up in 2019, maybe early 2020. Isn't it true that the year of a presidential or the year before a presidential election starts to get interesting in U.S. equities? Do you see something similar this time?
Well, I think the primary driving force behind the U.S. equity market has been foreign capital inflows. Simple as that. And all you have to do is look at the three indexes. The Dow reflects international capital. It just looks at like the Japanese and Chinese when they come over and buy real estate. What do? They Rockefeller Center. They buy the trophies. Okay, they don't go down, the side street in Poughkeepsie and start buying up $200,000 houses. They're not interested in that. So in equities, it's the same thing. They will come in and they'll buy the big names. They feel comfortable with that. It's impressive. Okay. They'll buy some in the S&P 500. They really stay away from the NASDAQ. So what you get is the Dow is the big capital international. The S&P is a little mix between domestic institutions and international. And NASDAQ's mostly retail. So the Dow coming out of December led everything. Okay, now the Dow started peaking off a little bit. Then you have the NASDAQ still going up, making highs when the Dow has not. So that's showing the retail market coming in more and not necessarily the domestic, the international side. The S&P made new highs above February, but not the Dow. So these are things to kind of look at to see where the visually we'll show you where capital is actually moving from. And what we have to understand is that the amount of money that's out there in the bond markets is about 10 to 1 to equities. And I know you get a lot of people saying, oh, the U.S. dollar's got to crash. We got a, $21 trillion deficit. We have $150 plus trillion debt market out there. The U.S. is a tiny fraction of it. And, you've got the ECB has destroyed its bond market with its quantitative easing. So does the Bank of Japan. This is why the dollar is so strong. The Bank of Japan bragged that they bought 97% of the auction. That's a good thing. That means there is no private bid. Okay, the same thing with the ECB. I mean, a pension fund needs generally 8% to break even. They can't buy 10-year, bonds from Italy at 1.5% to 3%. They're guaranteed a loss. So this is why they've been going into emerging markets. This is why you see a lot of them, they've been buying farmland, for example. Why do they buy a big tract of farmland? They rent it out. They're collecting 5% to 7% on rents. That's great for them. That's much better than what they can earn in a bond. So there have been shifts. And this is the shift that we've been talking about. We're moving, you know, from public to private. The U.S. will be the last, okay? Just as I just said, there's no, you know, there's nobody offering 90-day paper. It's been bought up by everybody. Yet, you've got emerging market problems. Your banking system is catastrophic. And the ECB is something completely different than the Fed. People think the central banks are the same. The ECB can actually go, you know, bankrupt.
They're not as solidified among the, you know, we have 12 to 13 member banks. They have their own sovereign rules and whatnot. So it's more of a loose central bank, isn't it? Even though the EU is a larger block and maybe even stronger economically, they don't have as tight of a rein, you might say.
Each member kept its own central bank. And that local central bank is the one that actually prints the euros. The ECB does not print. So it's very, very convoluted. The structure was set up to pretend they still had their sovereignty, but at the same time, they wanted to say that it didn't exist.
Now that the Fed might be entering a more dovish quantitative easing, that could potentially put, I guess, the U.S. dollar in a negative real interest rate scenario, which tends to bode well for the precious metals, which are oftentimes, you know, priced in U.S. dollars. Do you have any forecasts there or any thoughts for our precious metals aficionados?
I mean, we're going to be heading back up finally in the metals, but you're looking at, you know, next year. The critical thing here is, you know, who do you trust and what do you believe? And it's not a question of, I mean, like you said, for the last, you know, 20 years, everybody's saying, oh, you know, the hard money guys, this, that. They're all talking to each other. And that doesn't matter. When I go to Starbucks, I stand in line, you know, the young kids in front of me, they don't have cash. They just hold up their phone. All right. You know, each generation is a little bit different. And I would say the biggest risk you have with the precious metals going forward is that the younger generations don't look at it the same way. I just posted an article that I wrote. It was quite funny. A woman found a handful of $20 gold pieces. She went to Walmart and tried to spend them, and they wouldn't accept them.
Don't you wish you were the cashier that day?
Yeah, I mean, I know. So obviously, they have no clue. It says $20. Well, I don't know what it is. So Walmart says, you got to go to a bank and cash them in over there. She goes to the bank. She goes to cash them in. They look at $20. They give her a $20 bill.
That's where, about 20 years ago when I was starting in the numismatics, we would always go to the Walmart, any bank that was adjacent to the Walmarts, because people will take their half dollars and dollars, and they're, you know, the 40 and 90% silver pieces, and they don't think anything of it. So you would find the bulk of them in what you might say the higher volume Walmart areas. You could just get a roll or two of silver coins. Your thoughts on the younger generation, the Generation Z and millennials, they're not, as you say, interested in precious metals yet. Their focus is more in the direction of cryptos. Do you have any thoughts for Bitcoin now that we've let the air out of the tires, that we might have another run in the cryptocurrencies?
The cryptocurrencies are just a trading vehicle. I mean, there's no shot at this actually displacing the dollar and all that sort of stuff. You have to realize, you know, he who has the guns makes the rules, all right? If anybody thinks that they can create a private currency that's going to circumvent the central banks and all this stuff, then it's a pipe dream. I mean, you start threatening the power of government, they're just going to come in. The SEC and CFTC are already after a lot of crypto currencies, kind of changed the whole industry. Now, I do think that you're probably going to see them back towards the more on the equity side. It seems to be what they are more of an investor type thing. And I think they will eventually come back into like some precious metals. But you have to understand, we have to get to that point that it becomes more commonly known. We haven't reached that yet, and that's probably starting next year. That's when people begin to question the validity of government.
Just quick thoughts on the precious metals equities. It would seem as though there's some value there. We've seen several stocks in recent weeks perk up and show some signs of life, and a few even breaking out this week. Your thoughts on the XAU and HUI and any other components that you like?
Institutions can at least buy the precious metal equities. They can't really buy the bullion. And mainly because, you know, they have to earn income. The ones that will deal with the bullion end up usually because they're buying the bullion and then they lease it out. And then people accuse them of suppressing the gold price. But they have to earn income. They can't just simply take it and put it in a vault like a retail investor can. They have to pay, you know, pension premiums and things of this nature. So anything they do must have an income to it. And so they can do the precious metal equities as long as they get dividends. But just taking something and put it in a sock drawer, that's not what an institution can do. Our economic confidence model, which is kind of really tracks the business cycle, we're into this final leg of it, which is we're going to see more of a hard landing outside the United States in particular, but it's also why the Fed is backing off to some degree. That tends to bottom in the first quarter next year and then starts to turn up. So I'm looking at that stage in the game for the perception to change. And that's the critical thing. Although the stock market has rallied quite dramatically, a friend of mine, I mean, I check, you know, regularly, cash in deposits at some of the biggest brokerage houses are at record highs. The retail sold, they were, you know, listened to all this stuff, oh, the stock market's going to crash. They missed this last rally again. They've said, look, you know, cash in people's accounts is at record highs back at 2000, you know, 08 and 09 levels. So you have not the potential for a major crash because not everybody's in it. All right. You have more of the potential of a major blowout to the upside because once they see that this thing is just going to go up, that's it. You know, government, we can't trust. Where do I put my money? Bonds, you start getting, you know, more states in trouble. There's no place to go but up. You got so many governments outside the United States that are in trouble, and U.S. will be the last. And this is what you'll have to understand. U.S. is reserve currency. It's not the place where anything starts. It always starts in the peripheral. All right, even during, you know, the Great Depression, there was a financial, you know, crisis in 31. Most of Europe defaulted. Even Britain went into a moratorium. You know, Asia defaulted. You can go on eBay and buy bonds. You know, South America defaulted for like the fourth time. All right, so that's why the dollar went up so high during the Great Depression. The politicians misunderstood it. They started protectionism because the dollar was up so high, everybody could undercut us on everything. So politicians don't understand the system. And so the dollar going up is not fantastic. That is the sign that it's going to break the system. If you look at what has happened, when the dollar went up dramatically in 1931, what did it do? It led to basically, you know, Roosevelt coming into power, confiscation of gold, devaluation of the dollar. All right, the next time the dollar went up really dramatically, into 1985, the British pound went to par. What did they do? They formed G5. That's how G5 began. The whole premise of it, to force the dollar down by 40%. You know, so it's the dollar going up that breaks the monetary system, not going down. If the dollar goes down, as these people, oh, the dollar is going to crash, you know, that will be fantastic. Corporate profits will rise. Trump will be, you know, beside himself, trade, we're creating all kinds of jobs. The U.S. always wants a lower dollar. It's everybody else that they think they want a higher currency that means they're doing good. No, it does not. It means you can't sell anything and you're going to get deflation.
One of your key takeaway points here for our, you know, everyday portfolio investor is don't get scared off the bull. We're climbing a wall of worry still a decade later. Joseph Granville, that people just have a tendency to get nervous. They read too many headlines that get them off their game. Just let the portfolio dynamics work.
Yeah, I mean, the markets don't lie. You know, it's largely the TV, you know, talking heads. People ask me, gee, why don't you go, you know, on TV? And so, I don't have the time to go fly into some studio or whatever. I'm too busy for that. So the people that end up doing that usually are the ones that don't have a business. So it's just the way it is. I mean, they all say the same thing. Stock market's going to crash. This, just ask, okay, fine, the stock market's going to crash. The bonds go up. Do you really want to buy more government, you know, sovereign bonds? And people say no. The Dow is going to go up much higher. We're eventually, you know, we'll see, honestly, we'll see probably 40,000 before you'll ever see, you know, 10,000. That's just the way it is.
That's really, I think, the takeaway point today. That's the headline here. We'll see 40,000 before we see 10,000 on the Dow. Let's talk again in 2019.
Thank you for inviting me.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. Goldseek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.